If you want trusted market data delivered straight to your inbox, sign up to AHDB's market emails for updates on the latest grain and livestock prices, red meat and dairy trends, and evidence-based insights across all farming sectors. Search for Preference Centre at ahdb.org.uk and follow the instructions to make sure you're getting the insights that matter most to your business.
Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hi, and welcome to this four-part mini-series where we dig into the AHDB Beef and Lamb flagship knowledge exchange programme, Roots to Resilience. The Roots to Resilience programme has been going for 2 years now, and so far we've included activity on business planning and finances, ecological functioning, succession and communication, and of course, the world-renowned Ranching for Profit course. I'm Amy Hughes, and I'll be talking to farmers from across the country who have been involved with the programme to find out why they got involved, what they've got out of it, what impact that has had on their farming businesses and lives since. Today, I'm going to be speaking to the lovely Alan Robinson from the Cumbria-Yorkshire border. And we start by Alan explaining to me more about his farming endeavours.
I farm two sites, both in the Yorkshire Dales National Park, one in Yorkshire, one in Cumbria. So 550 acres in total, just over actually. 200 acres is an FBT. It's very rough grazing, like an enclosed allotment. So that's pretty much conservation grazing up there. And then the main block is a share farm. So 350 acres of hay meadows and extensive wood pasture, amp grazed pretty much all year round. Cows don't go inside, so lots of bale grazing and deferred grazing. Both sites all native breed belted Galloways. There'll be about 40 mature animals calving this year, with followers all the way through to a few weeks old now.
That joint venture is a fairly newish thing, isn't it, for you?
Yeah, they're both fairly new. So I think the FBT will be about 9 months now, and the share farm will be seven months. So yeah, just getting into the swing of it, trying to understand what grows when, and building a system which is fairly resilient and I guess low input and regenerative. The main site is half an hour from home. So that's a big focus for me, is how to run a system which can have cows that fend for themselves most of the time. So I try and go there every other day, if possible, and just leave them to it, to be cows the rest of the time.
All right, let's talk about Roots Resilience then, because I just had to ask you, because I couldn't remember which bits you've been involved in, but it turns out you've been involved in every single bit of it, which is excellent. So we obviously launched Roots to Resilience in October 23. What were your first thoughts when you saw it advertised, as it were, the programme, and what made you want to get involved?
So I am a big believer in trying to, I guess, knowledge exchange, learning and developing yourself. Even if you don't necessarily understand what's going on, it's just getting involved and seeing what happens. And that's what Roots Resilience is, I guess. It's a bit different for a lot of people, but you see value out of every bit that you go to. I was attracted to it because I was really keen on grazing animals all year round and how to do that in a sustainable way. So how to do that in a way that maximises margin and as well as profit, I guess, but also in a way that means that you don't have to spend all your time trying to get by. So resilience from a time perspective, probably more than anything else as well. I think you got that, but I also got a lot more. I think I learned a lot more about myself, and especially the bits that we did Ranching for Profit wise, in terms of Elaine Fraser as well. I learned more about how to be a bit vulnerable and how to maybe think about the why of things as well as the how. And then with Jason, obviously, it was a bit more about the how in terms of grass and grazing, which is very relevant to an outdoor all year round sort of system.
So just for anybody that's listening, Jason is Jason Rowntree. We did the ecological functioning and systems functioning with him. Elaine Fraser did the succession last year. And then Ranching for Profit is the four-day course that we're incorporating into Roots to Resilience at the minute. You've also done some business stuff with Emily Grant as well, haven't you? But so you said then that you had an interest in outwintering cattle or farming cattle in a sustainable, low input regenerative way before getting involved with Roots to Resilience. You then went on to speak about the why, and did you know the why before you came to Roots? Like, did you just know that you were interested in doing it, but it was kind of like a technical interest almost, or has Roots to Resilience added anything to what you already had in your head?
Before Roots to Resilience, I was really interested in outwintering and in low input systems. I did have a why, but I wasn't really sure what it was. And I also thought that outwintering cattle was the only way to be profitable.
Yeah.
But I think during the last 12 months or so, there are other ways to be profitable. It just depends what it means for you. I've not come away from it because it works really well for me in terms of the outwintering. But I think there are elements of every system that anyone can put into practice if they want to and make it work for them. And I probably was a bit too narrow-minded to start with about that.
Well, no, I wouldn't. I think narrow-minded's too harsh, but I'm glad you've said that, because Roots Resilience definitely isn't a regenerative program. It's not aimed at any system at all. It's exactly what you said. How do you want to farm? What do you want to do? Because every business has got to be profitable, hasn't it? It's a business. It wouldn't be a business if it wasn't. So it's figuring out what excites you about farming, how you want to do it, and then going for it, I suppose, isn't it? Okay, let's talk about the four-day business course, which at the minute is ranching for profit. That really, for the programme, is like the kick-off bit, as it were, because we take all the feedback from that to build the extra activity throughout the year. So talk us through it. Was it what you expected? What did you get out of that?
It was not what I expected. No, it was. I think partly around you don't have to be a particular kind of system to be profitable was the first bit that I took from it. Because, like the guys who come over and do the course say, they'll have anyone from proper hardcore production feedlots to proper regen in their system, in their courses. That was really interesting. I didn't expect that. But that made me really look and think about my business differently, as well as splitting up enterprises. So the course is really good at making you understand the cost of different enterprises, so whether that's cow and calf, and then selling those calves as stores. Even if you have a finishing system, you put them into that finishing, so you can actually look at the actual costs and production costs of that. So that's really helped me, because the system I run might not have the quality grazing needed to finish animals. I don't know yet, but it might not. But I now know how I can run the numbers to show that and to really understand whether it's worth it or not for me. But also, I think it made me, like I said earlier, it made me look at the why of why I do it, but also the vulnerability. Like, you have to be really vulnerable in some of those sessions, and that was really not what I expected at all.
And how did you find that? Like, was it because let's face it, vulnerability is not something that we do well in farming, generally speaking. But did you feel uncomfortable, I suppose, in what I'm asking in a not a very good way? Did you feel uncomfortable in that, or like, how did you find the delivery?
The beauty of a course that everyone who's there pays for is everyone's there for the same reason, and everyone is prepared to go with it because they're actually engaged and want to be there. I guess everyone feels uncomfortable being put in that position, but I think you feel very comfortable that everyone's there for the same reasons as you. So showing that vulnerability and being very open, and I guess for a lot of people quite emotional, because it's always an emotive conversation with a lot of them to have, doesn't feel out of place.
No, and I suppose by the time you've done 4 days together as well, because it's four days and people stay overnight, you are like a little family, aren't you, at the end of it? Like, you will have made a really good peer group out of that course.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, that's half of it. Obviously, the courses that AHDB and everyone else run are fantastic, but part of it and part of being there is meeting people who probably have similar challenges and similar views to you. But also, if they don't, you can come together and actually build quite a nice network from it. If nothing else, you meet different people who might do things totally differently to you.
Whilst we're on people, because for me, that is what Roots to Resilience is all about. It's getting the people right. Obviously, there's a big financial aspect, which is really, really important, but where it came from was that we don't have a lot of people stuff in the industry. We don't place a lot of emphasis on the people side of things. And when most of us are in family farming businesses, I feel that's quite important. So there is quite a lot of, you know, people stuff. We did some succession. Well, I say succession, it was mainly communication, actually, with Elaine Fraser last year. But it just so happened that that is the biggest part of any succession planning. Talk us through those events, because I certainly felt like they were nothing that I had seen in our industry before, in a good way, I think, for me.
I think Elaine Fraser and Ranching for Profit both hit on communication and succession in similar but also different ways. I don't think it makes it any easier, no matter how many of these you go to. But you're right. I think it's the biggest challenge in the industry, or one of. You've got to get everyone there is probably the biggest thing. The people in the room, the majority of the time, are those that are open and want to move things forward. Mm-hmm. The hardest bit is probably getting people there who might not see the value in it, but probably would get the most value out of it. I'm not sure how you do that, but the biggest portion of communication is everyone knowing why people want to communicate and the way that they are communicating. And if you're not able to see or understand that, it's very difficult for someone who's probably been on the course to put that forward. But that being said, it's really hard to get everyone around the table at the same time, at the same place.
It is. And and we had a lot of phone calls, actually, when we were booking people onto those events about, you know, I really want to come, but I want mum, dad, brother, whoever to come with me, and I can't get them to come. And we spoke to Elaine about it. We were like, what tips and tricks have you got here to help these people? And she just said nothing. She said they need to come on their own and have a listen. She said, and then it's a softly, but like, you know, it's practice, isn't it, with communication? Everything's practice. Go home and practice what you've learned, and then maybe next time they might be interested to come. But you're right, it's such a difficult thing, which is why it's a big part of this program, because there's no point shying away from it. Like, we've got to have a go, haven't we? But it is hard. It is definitely hard.
I think both of them, though, do give you the confidence to go and try some things, because you have a blueprint of what can work and how it can succeed. It does give you the confidence to try things. And if they don't work or they don't land, there's other methods as well. But it's about starting.
It is. Was it Elaine that said, if you're not failing, you're not learning? Somebody said, if you're not failing, you're not learning. So
Take it yourself.
I should have learned loads by now. Coming back to your business then, since Roots Resilience, you've spoken through a few things that you've taken away from it. Is there anything tangible that you've taken away? Have you done anything differently in your business as a result of attending Roots to Resilience?
Yes. The challenge with my business is it's fairly young, which is a great thing because you can change and adapt, but also you need to see a season through to really understand what can work. But yes, I have. So last year we focused on making a lot of bales of hay to feed out over winter and then defer grass. This year we're going to defer more grass and make less bales because there's a big cost to us in terms of making bales. So that's probably one thing which has changed, and my probably focus has changed a bit in that perspective. This time round, this year round, I'm really focusing on what it's going to cost me to get a calf through to weaning, because that's a massive driver for me in terms of, do I keep animals to 3 years old, like these belted Galloways, to 3 years old to finish, or do I look at selling them weaned sort of this time of year just before? Because there's a massive difference in my costs to do that. So I could probably have three times the number of mature animals producing a calf every year, which might give me better profit. So I don't know where I am on the numbers, but I know how to get there now. And that's probably the biggest thing is being able to understand what that's going to look like.
Some people would say that maybe hadn't been involved in Roots Resilience, if it's going to take you nearly 3 years to finish a belted Galloway, why don't you have a different breed? Is this all part of the plan?
I'll be very honest. I didn't want belted Galloways when I took on the agreement that I have, the share farm. But with the necessity to have a native breed, a pedigree native breed on that land, belted Galloways are a good fit. In my area, there's quite a lot of them, so they're easy to get hold of. They do look after themselves, and they do really well off grass. I think the challenge with possibly any native breed, but especially ones where there's a lot on hill ground, is that they can be left to mature quite slowly. Yeah. Whereas I need to bring that back to now focus commercially on what's possible, but I won't get there overnight. So I actually really like the belters. They're doing a really good job and they stay behind a wire really well. But I don't know where I'm going to end up with finishing them. I might be better off not finishing anything. That's where I'm getting to now.
But that's why I asked you that question, because that's the whole point, isn't it? You're working with what you've got to work with the requirements for that land, native breed. You've looked at the market in the area, what's easy to get hold of and what cow is going to fit your system, rather than making the system fit the cow.
Yeah.
And you're now looking at how you make those work in the most commercial way and how you do that. And there's no mindset of, I must finish these cattle. If it's not going to work commercially, you don't have to finish those cattle, do you? That's the point that I was trying to get to, that you know, you've done your figures and you know what you're trying to achieve, and you're being agile about it. And you said something really important: you're not going to get there overnight. And I think that's what puts a lot of people off change, isn't it? Because it takes a long time to see it or see the effects of it, doesn't it? Sometimes, and if you're anything like me, you get impatient and bored, but especially in farming, it takes ages to see any change. So what are your future plans then?
So the future plans are to take on more land. There's more land to put into the share farm this time next year. Mm-hmm. And there's another local landowner who wants me to graze native breed cattle over the summer on their land, which is ideal because it gives me more chance to defer more grass on the own holding. So within the next 12 months it should be up to about 900 acres, which means that, all being well, I should be able to get to 100 breeding animals within the next sort of 2 or 3 years. And that's probably, if my numbers add up to what I think, which is it's a better option to sell them store than it is to take anything through to finishing. But the importance, I think, more than anything for the future is just to still be able to be resilient, but also be able to really understand the numbers behind it. And the market, the site and the cows are half an hour from home, so I still need an animal that looks after itself. I don't want to push them too hard and make that system a lot harder than what it needs to be. I'd rather have a bit to fall back onto, with it being the sort of where it is and, mm-hmm. and a bit away from home, probably keeping numbers just manageable more than anything, but focusing on margin, which is the biggest thing for me.
Right, we're going to ask the same question to everybody that does one of these podcasts with us. If you had to sum Roots to Resilience up in one sentence, how would you describe it?
It's a really varied programme, which makes it quite hard to sum it up in one sentence. So one sentence, for me, it's an open invite to just be able to explore. You can explore your system, you can explore your business, probably explore yourself in some weird way, but also explore what other people are doing as well. Although not everything will fit what you want to do, and then I guess your why, there'll be something there that sticks and maybe makes you see a little bit differently. And for me, that's really important.
So there we have it, our fourth and final episode of the Roots to Resilience miniseries with Alan Robinson. I think Alan gives a totally different perspective, being at a different stage of his farming career, but it just shows how this programme is really relevant to anybody in farming. For anybody that wants to know more about the programme, please do visit the website. You'll find existing resources on there, including videos and workbooks and information about any upcoming activity.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.